A Kotra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. You know, there are these huge kind of nebulous buzzwords floating around the digital economy.
Right.
And today, we want to tackle one of the big ones, crowdsourcing. We're going to pin down its strategic truth by diving into Darren C. Brabham's really foundational work, Crowdsourcing. It's part of the MIT Press Essential Knowledge series.
Yeah, and crowdsourcing, it's a term that gets thrown around so casually, doesn't it? It's almost lost its real meaning.
Totally.
So our mission today really is to get past that vague wisdom of the crowd idea. We want to treat crowdsourcing like Brabham does as a precise strategic management discipline. It actually has a defined methodology.
And I think that methodology is something we desperately need right now.
Yeah.
I mean, organizations, they're swimming in information, potential collaborators, mm-hmm. but often there's just no clear method for actually using all that potential effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And crucially, doing it ethically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't tell a successful crowdsourcing project from a complete flop, you probably need this book's blueprint.
Absolutely. It's a guide.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the person who built this blueprint, Darren C. Brabham, PhD. He is an associate professor over at the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
Okay.
And he's widely recognized, really, as one of the key academic researchers who helped define this field.
Define it. So you mean he's the one who kind of took it from like tech blog hype and anecdotal stories.
Exactly. From just stories.
And turned it into something structured. Something academic.
Precisely. But what makes his perspective really stand out?
Yeah, what's his unique angle?
I think it's the balance he strikes. He uses that rigorous scholarly lens,
yeah.
You know, communication theory, solid empirical research, but he combines it with practical, hands-on experience.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, he consulted in web development, digital media, so he gets both the theory and the practice, and that gives him this, well, this holistic view that includes a really critical ethical analysis that's quite different from the purely sort of rah-rah celebratory accounts you sometimes see.
Right, the boosterish stuff.
He knows how the system actually works on the ground, not just, you know, how the venture capitalists might want it to look.
That friction you mentioned, that sounds important, but if he's focusing so much on the risks, the ethical side, does that risk maybe scaring off smaller organizations, making them think, oh, this is too complex, too risky for us?
That's a fair question, but I don't think so. Not if you read the book as he intends it as a navigational guide, really. The core argument is actually pretty powerful and quite concise.
Okay.
Basically, crowdsourcing is an online distributed model. It's for problem solving, yes, but also for production.
Mm.
And here's the key. Success isn't random. It hinges entirely on deliberately matching the type of problem you have with the specific crowdsourcing approach you use to tackle it.
Okay, so that's the heart of it right there. Get that pairing wrong.
And you fail, predictably.
Right. It busts that myth, doesn't it, that the wisdom of the crowd is some kind of automatic magic.
Exactly. It's not magic. It needs to be unlocked carefully. So the book is essentially a diagnostic tool.
Yeah.
It gives you this practical typology, this framework, and a strategic guide for actually doing it.
A roadmap.
It is a roadmap, and you can see who it's for by the audience. He mentions business managers, entrepreneurs, sure, but also nonprofit leaders, public administrators.
Yeah.
Really, anyone interested in the future of work, innovation, civic participation, they need to get this strategic structure.
Okay, let's unpack that core framework then. That typology sounds key. But maybe first, like you said, we should cut through the noise. What isn't crowdsourcing, according to Brabham? What gets confused with it?
Yeah, that's important. Precision matters here.
Right.
So crowdsourcing is not the same as outsourcing. Outsourcing is when you have a defined task and you give it to a specific contracted third party. Crowdsourcing, on the other hand, involves an open call. It goes out to an undefined network, a crowd.
Open call, undefined network. Got it.
And it's also different from just general user-generated content, like, say, random blog comments. Why? Because crowdsourcing is always in response to a specific articulated problem that the organization poses. It's highly intentional.
Okay, that intentionality.
Yeah.
That leads us straight into the core, the intellectual heart of the book.
This
is a four-part typology. This is the diagnostic tool, right?
Exactly. This is where you figure out what kind of problem you actually have.
And using the wrong approach means basically guaranteed failure.
Pretty much.
Okay, let's break it down. What's the first type? Maybe the one that powers a lot of those big collaborative platforms we see.
Right. The first one is knowledge discovery and management.
Okay.
The goal here is basically aggregating and organizing information that's spread out everywhere, you know, distributed knowledge. The aim is to create a shared resource.
So the classic example is
Wikipedia, obviously. Or think about citizen science projects like Galaxy Zoo, where thousands of people help classify images of stars and galaxies.
Yeah, right.
What drives success there? It's primarily intrinsic motivation.
Intrinsic, meaning not money.
Exactly. People aren't doing it for cash prizes, usually. They're doing it because, well, maybe it's fun. Maybe it's altruism. Maybe they just want to contribute to science or build something useful together.
Okay, that makes sense. Altruism, fun. But let's shift gears to a totally different kind of motivation, maybe a different kind of problem. What about peer-vetted creative production?
Right, this one's different. This approach is used for problems that are more subjective, more aesthetic. Think design, creative ideas.
Okay.
And the key here is that the community, the crowd, doesn't just submit the ideas, they also judge them. They vote on what's best.
Ah, okay. So the crowd does both the creating and the selecting. What's a good example?
The perfect example is Threadless, the t-shirt company.
Yeah, I know Threadless.
Right. So the crowd submits t-shirt designs, and then the same crowd votes on which designs they actually like and want to buy.
That's clever.
It's incredibly powerful because what are they doing? They're essentially outsourcing the design process and the market research at the same time.
Okay, hold on. Outsourcing design and market research. How does the voting part actually save them money or like reduce the risk? Couldn't they just hire a bunch of designers?
They absolutely could hire designers internally, but think about the cost. That would mean a massive upfront investment in creating potentially hundreds of designs.
They might just bomb in the marketplace.
Exactly. They might not sell. By using the crowd to pre-vet the designs through voting, Threadless knows before they print anything which shirts people have already said they want.
Ah, so they only print the proven winners.
Right. It minimizes their inventory risk hugely. Plus, it builds this really deep sense of community loyalty because the crowd feels like they have ownership, like they help choose the products. It's actually a very strategic way to control risk.
Okay, that makes complete sense now. Very smart. Now, what about problems that aren't subjective like design, but are really complex, maybe technical or scientific?
For those, you'd likely use broadcast search. This is essential for tackling big science challenges or complex R&D problems where you really need specialized, maybe even global expertise.
Okay, so broadcast search.
This is for problems that have a verifiable objective solution. There's a right answer, or at least a best answer based on data.
Right.
You basically broadcast the challenge, often with a significant cash prize attached to a global audience of potential solvers. Think platforms like Inocentive. A chemical company might post a tricky formulation problem they can't crack internally.
And someone, somewhere out there, might have the key insight.
Precisely. And the classic benchmark example here is the Netflix prize.
Oh yeah, the $1 million prize. To improve their recommendation algorithm, right?
That's the one. And what was so fascinating about the result wasn't just that someone eventually won it, but who won it.
Oh, so?
The winning teams and many of the top contenders were often these incredibly diverse cross-disciplinary groups. You had mathematicians, computer scientists, data visualization experts, people who wouldn't normally work together, maybe wouldn't even exist within Netflix's own R&D department.
Huh. So the power is tapping into expertise you didn't even know existed, or combinations of expertise.
Exactly. Unforeseen expertise, novel approaches from different fields. That's the strength of broadcast search.
Okay. That leaves one more type. And you mentioned this is maybe the most controversial one.
Yes. Distributed Human Intelligence Tasking, or DHIT for short.
DHIT.
This is the micro-tasking model. Think about massive, often repetitive tasks that still need actual human intelligence things AI can't quite do reliably yet.
Right.
These big tasks get broken down into thousands, maybe millions, of tiny micro-tasks, and people get paid very small amounts, sometimes just pennies, to complete each one.
And the big example here is?
Amazon Mechanical Turk, or MTurk. That's the archetype.
And this is the kind of work. It's behind the scenes, right? It's increasingly feeding things like large language models, training AI systems, like tagging images, verifying search results, maybe transcribing difficult audio snippets, things that need a human eye or ear, but at massive scale.
Precisely that. It's essential digital labor, often low cost. But as you hinted, this is also where Brabham really digs into the ethics in Chapter 5.
Yeah.
Because this model immediately brings up concerns about, well, the digital sweatshop. The potential for exploitation is high given the often very low wages for these micro tasks.
Okay, so low wages is the big one. What other ethical issues does Brabham highlight, particularly around these models?
Well, beyond pay, he stresses that organizations must be super clear about IP and ownership.
IP, intellectual property.
Right. You need crystal clear terms and conditions. Who owns the winning idea in a contest? What about the losing submissions, especially in creative or broadcast search? Avoiding disputes later is crucial.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And with these huge, often anonymous crowds doing the work, how do you even manage quality control?
That's a huge challenge, and it has to be built in from the start. Brabham talks about needing robust mechanisms, things like peer review systems within the platform, maybe reputation scores for workers, sometimes expert panels to evaluate the output.
So you need ways to vet the work.
Absolutely. You have to maintain the integrity of the whole project. And his core point here, ethically, is that organizations need to shift their mindset. They need to see participants not just as cheap, disposable labor,
but as partners.
Yes, as partners in the process. Fostering a fair and respectful relationship.
It really sounds like managing that tension, getting massive input, but doing it fairly and ethically, that's maybe the secret sauce. What separates a sustainable strategy from just a, you know, quick platform that burns out its users?
I think that captures it perfectly, and it leads us really nicely into the key themes that run through the whole book. Brabham's number one message is crystal clear. Crowdsourcing is a strategic discipline, not a magic bullet.
Right. So just like posting, hey, internet, solve my problem on social media. That's not a strategy.
Definitely not. Success demands serious planning, clear goals, intentional design of the process. The benefit, though, is accessing perspectives and ideas your internal teams might never even think of.
Okay. Theme one, strategy, not magic. What's next?
The second theme follows directly from our discussion of the types. The typology is the key to success.
Meaning you absolutely have to diagnose your problem correctly before you start.
You have to. The cost of getting it wrong is huge. If you try to use, say, a peer-vetted creative contest designed for subjective stuff to solve a complex, objective scientific problem,
we'll just get a ton of noise, useless ideas.
Exactly. A massive waste of time, resources, and probably goodwill from the crowd, too.
Okay, typology is key. Third theme.
It's about what makes the crowd tick. Motivation is multifaceted and context-dependent.
Back to the intrinsic versus extrinsic stuff.
Right. Incentives go way beyond just cash prizes, especially in those knowledge discovery projects like Wikipedia. Often it's the intrinsic stuff, the fun, learning a new skill, the feeling of contributing, the social connection that really fuels the most successful and, importantly, sustainable long-term projects.
Don't underestimate the power of wanting to help or belong.
Absolutely. And finally, the theme we just touched on. Ethical responsibility cannot be ignored.
This feels like a cornerstone for Brabham.
It really is. The long-term success, the viability of any crowdsourcing project, depends on building that fair, respectful relationship with the crowd. Participants need to feel valued as partners, not just, you know, cogs in a machine.
Yeah. The book sounds like it's full of these really clear, memorable takeaways. Mm-hmm. Let's maybe highlight a couple of those core ideas, those sort of paraphrased quotes that capture the essence.
Good idea. The first one really nails the intentionality aspect. Crowdsourcing is the strategic act of building and engaging with a specific community online to solve a particular type of problem.
Strategic act. Building a community. Mm-hmm. Specific problem. It forces you away from just thinking transactionally, doesn't it?
Exactly. You're not just buying solutions. You're cultivating a relationship with a community first. That community is the foundation.
Okay. And then there's that practical warning we keep coming back to.
Right. The most common mistake in crowdsourcing is a mismatch between the problem type and the process type. Creative contests cannot solve scientific problems.
That's about as direct as it gets.
It's a cold, hard warning. Is your problem objective or subjective? Is it about getting knowledge or getting micro labor done? You have to align the model you use. There's no one size fits all shortcut.
And the ethical core statement.
An organization's ethical responsibility does not end with a terms of service agreement. It extends to fostering a fair, respectful, and mutually beneficial relationship with the crowd.
So clicking I agree isn't enough.
Not by a long shot. It's a mandate, really, for corporate social responsibility in this new digital labor market. Respecting the crowd's contribution, their intellectual and creative labor, it's vital for the organization's reputation and long-term health.
Okay, this is all great theory and framework. How do we actually apply this stuff right now? Let's think about business leaders, entrepreneurs.
For them, this is immediately useful, especially in areas like innovation and R&D. Think about a startup, maybe tight on cash, facing a really complex technical hurdle.
Yeah.
Instead of hiring expensive specialized engineers they might not need long term, they could strategically use a broadcast search model. Put the problem out on a platform like Inocentive.
Tap into global expertise for that specific problem.
Exactly. They could potentially save huge amounts of money and get solutions they'd never find internally. It genuinely changes the economics of innovation for smaller players.
Okay, that's business. What about, say, civic engagement?
Yeah.
Governments or nonprofits?
Loads of potential there, too. Governments could use peer-vetted production, remember, subjective problems, crowd voting, to get citizen input on designs for maybe a new public library or park. Let the community have a real say in the aesthetics.
That could build buy-in.
Definitely. Or they could use knowledge discovery. Think about apps like Fix Me Street or similar concept systems where citizens report potholes, broken streetlights, maybe even pollution events.
So citizens become like distributed sensors data collectors.
Precisely. They act as a constant widespread monitoring network.
Okay, so that's organizations. But what about for us, just as individuals trying to understand the world? How does this framework help the average person, the learner?
I think the application here is really personal and quite critical. The book gives you a lens, a framework for analyzing the digital economy that surrounds you every day.
How so?
Well, think about the apps you use. Navigation apps like Waze, maybe language learning apps like Duolingo.
Yeah.
When you understand Brabham's typology, you start to realize something. When you use Waze and it tracks your speed or you report a traffic jam, you're not just a user.
I'm contributing.
You're contributing. You might be part of a DHIT system providing real-time data or a knowledge discovery participant helping build that map's accuracy. You're actively feeding the system's knowledge base.
Whoa.
You start to see the hidden mechanics, the crowdsourcing engines humming away inside apps you use every single day.
Wow. I hadn't actually thought about Waze quite like that before. Just by driving, I'm contributing labor to their system by reporting traffic. That is a pretty profound shift in perspective, actually.
Changes how you see things.
For me, thinking about all this, what surprised me most wasn't the types themselves, but realizing how much active work successful crowdsourcing requires. It's not passive at all.
Right.
You can't just, like, launch a website, put out an open call, and then sit back and wait for genius to magically appear. It takes significant ongoing management effort, building the community, designing the process, engaging people.
That's a great point. It's real work. For me, I think the biggest takeaway, the most valuable lesson, is about control, oddly enough. The wisdom of the crowd sounds chaotic, random. But Brabham shows it's not, or it doesn't have to be. It's actually a predictable, manageable resource if you channel it through disciplined strategy. The lasting insight for me is that absolute necessity of aligning everything, the problem, the process you choose, the specific crowd you target, and the incentive structure before you even think about starting. Get that alignment right first.
Alignment is everything. So a final thought for everyone listening. As you go through your week, maybe think about this. Is there a specific complex problem in your own life or maybe in your work that feels like it could only be solved by harnessing the power of a specialized crowd? And if so, which one of Brabham's four typologies would you actually need to use to have a shot at solving it successfully? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.